Now, this is the time for our speaker to share her experience, strength, and hope for approximately 30 minutes. Thank you for being here, Cindy. Glad you're here and you're on, girl.
Hi, I'm Cindy. I'm a compulsive eater, and I did not expect to speak so long, but I'm sure I will not have a problem. I led a workshop that was like 3 hours long one time, like not a couple weeks ago, and I ran out of time. So anyways, I'm very grateful to be here today. And if you guys, if anyone knew me like years ago, just the idea of me even opening my mouth for like 1 minute is like bizarre, let alone having a voice today, you know. And that's just one of the many miracles that this program has given me. And I've been in this program for over 20 years. I actually came to my very first meeting when I was 12, which kind of makes me feel like I was born into this disease, because I don't remember anything before food was overtaking my life, you know. My very first memory was being controlled by food in every aspect, and just the overall feeling of being different with food, different with people, different with relationships, and not being comfortable in my own body and my own skin and my own mind, you know. My mom used to tell me stories about trying to get me to stop eating, and I don't even remember this happening because I was so young, but she used to tell me, so I remember her telling me these stories, but not necessarily it happening at the time. And, you know, she would beg me to stop eating. She would offer me money to stop eating. And, you know, I would just throw a tantrum and scream and cry and throw a fit until she gave me my food. You know, from a very young age, food comforted me in a way that it doesn't comfort normal people, you know. And even, I mean, I think in society, we're kind of taught that food is a comfort, but for an average person, like, you know, you might find that comfort in little bits and pieces, but then you kind of go on with your life, you know. You see like movies where someone breaks up with their boyfriend, their girlfriends come over and they share ice cream, and then they go on with their life. But I can never go on with my life, you know. My life was always revolved around the food, and I always found it so bizarre that people could like sit there like at my job and have like, you know, a half of a donut sitting on their desk all day long and like nibble it all day long. Like, it was so beyond anything that I could comprehend. Because even if I wasn't eating the food, I was constantly thinking about the food and constantly trying not to eat the food, you know. And I grew up in a family where there was a lot of mixed emotions where food was concerned. My family would kind of like force feed me, not force, but like, you know, like, here, take, have my dessert and eat my leftovers. And then they would like corner me and tell me how I need to lose weight. And I was always going on a diet. And then as soon as I would start a diet, like they would bring home an apple pie, you know. And my parents, my mom, you know, always took me to like these, she knew something was wrong with me, but she didn't know what it was. And she didn't really know the problem, and she didn't know the solution, which I found later in the 12 steps of OA. But she knew there was something. So she knew that there was something that she needed to do to fix me. And so she took me at a very young age, not only to like nutritionists and, you know, diet programs, but like also like self-help, self-esteem groups, self-help places. Like, she always tried to find something to make me into something that I wasn't, basically. And, you know, she would take me over to my grandparents' house, and like they would get out the treadmill and have it like all set up for me. They would do things like take me to like some child's place to play, and then we'd have to like walk home a mile or 2 miles, you know. So that was like the message that I heard as a child. And I know I was really heavy, you know, as a very, very young child. And I have memories of being, I don't really know. I think I was maybe like in, I don't really know how old I was, but I just know that I was 100 pounds and everyone else was 50, you know. And I remember that from a very young age. And as a child, like, my life is in stages of my weight, you know, like I think, okay, so I was, when I was 11, I was 225 pounds. When I was 14 to 15, I was 440 pounds. Like that's the stages of my life. And when I was 11 years old, my mom took me to a dietitian, and I remember her, you know, telling me how she, you know, tells herself if she's going to get a box of cookies, she's going to ride her bike to the grocery store first. And by the time she rode her bike there, she would no longer want the cookies. And that stuck with me even as a very young child. I thought that was like the most ridiculous thing I'd ever heard. You know, I'm 11 years old and I'm sitting there thinking this woman's like a crock of shit. Like, you know, I'm like thinking like I would need two boxes of cookies because I went through all that trouble to get them in the first place. Like it would never even cross my mind to go through all that. And so I just knew that I was very different, you know, and I come from like this loud Italian family who like loved to eat. And so food was like plentiful in my family, but no matter how much food there was, it was never enough for me, you know. In my family, we'd all get together. We loved picnics and there would be tons of food everywhere and everyone would eat all day and then go on with their lives. And I like, my life was in stages of the food. Like the food was literally my life. Like I would go, you know, we'd have like this huge Thanksgiving dinner. And then like, all I could think about is how, you know, the day after Thanksgiving, I was going to lay in bed all day and eat turkey leftovers while walking the Isle of Lucy marathon. Like that was like the highlight of my year. And that's probably not normal when you're like 11 years old and you should probably be out playing with your friends. And so food was just everything in my world. And my mom was my best friend and she was my eating buddy. And my sister was kind of like the out of control teenager that everyone thought was going to like get knocked up when she was like 14, which never happened. But, you know, she was into drugs and, well, not drugs, I don't know, alcohol, I guess. And like boys and you know, sneaking out of the house. And, you know, I never got involved in that stuff because food worked too good for me. Like food worked so well for me that I didn't have to get into all those other things, you know? And I mean, I thank God today, you know, cause the food did serve its purpose and I could have gotten into a lot of other things that could take me down a road even worse than the food, like faster and quicker, but the food worked so well for me at such a young age that I never needed to. And I was bullied in school a lot, bullied really, really bad, like to the extent like it would never be allowed today, but back then it was okay. And I went to this independent study program and the two women that I met there told me that I needed to go to an Overeaters Anonymous meeting or else I would have to go back to public school. And I hated them for it, you know, as a teenager, but today I think they probably saved my life because they planted the seed that I would have maybe never known about, you know? And so I went to my first meeting and, you know, I don't remember much. I do remember people being very kind and loving in a way that was probably overwhelming for a 12-year-old. And I remember this woman that I thought was an old lady, which is probably about my age now, coming up to me and like giving me her number, you know, that's the kind of stuff. But, you know, the seed was planted and I just went to that one meeting and I left and I didn't come back for years. But, you know, I came back when I was ready. And then, you know, maybe like, I guess 12, 15 years later, I think I was like 23, I came back again and I had just started a new diet. And that diet became my first abstinence. And I walked into, you know, I remember the moment still after all these years, I remember the moment I just started a diet. I was swimming laps in my pool for exercise and the thought suddenly crossed my mind, which I know today is my higher power. Why don't you try Overeaters Anonymous, you know? And I went back and I went to a meeting and it was a very, very, I must've been really persistent because I had that experience when I was 12 and I went back. And then this time it was very awkward. There was two women, it was a very small meeting. They were reading the 12 and 12 or the 12 at the time. I don't think there was a 12 and 12 yet. They were reading from step four. My part that I had to read had to do with sex. And I was so embarrassed and it was so awkward. And these ladies told me about a newcomer meeting that Friday night, and I went to that meeting and I felt immediately home. And this was a really big meeting. I walked in with another lady that was a newcomer, and we kind of like gathered together and like sat together and talked. And sometimes I think about this woman, and it kind of brings tears to my eyes, because I think, you know, I don't know what happened to her. And I think about like, why did I get this thing? And I hope that she did somehow, but I never saw her again. And it just makes me, reminds me of how, like, you know, some of us get this thing, and it's such a gift, and such a gift that I pray that I never take for granted. And some of us don't. And, you know, the meeting was like super, super dark, which again shows me how I'm different than other people, because probably an average person would have ran for the hills. You know, it was just a very odd meeting. It wasn't like joy and laughter like the meetings that I know today. It was all about death and dying. And I think the speaker kind of tends to set the tone, and I think it was a very serious speaker, you know, that had probably dealt a lot with the illness, and so talked a lot about the fatality. And that is exactly what I needed at that moment in my life. You know, I was 23 years old, I was having heart palpitations and chest pains, and, you know, I was actually at my top weight, but my disease hadn't even taken me yet to a point of where it took me years later, because I was so young. Years later, you know, I get pregnant, and the doctor looks at me like, and I'm a married woman, you know, in like the prime of my life, or what should have been. The doctor looks at me and says, "What do you want to do?" I felt like I was talked to, like I was this like knocked up 14-year-old or something, you know. And she proceeded to tell me, if I had this baby, like all these horrible things that could happen to me and to the baby. And this disease stole that from me. You know, it stole what should have been the most beautiful experience of my life, and it took it from me, you know, and it took so many things from me. You know, I almost drowned one time when I was about 19. I was on the beach and got knocked over by a wave and could not get up because I was so big. You know, when you're that size, my top weight was well over 400 pounds. And when you're that size, you need time to maneuver yourself to get yourself up. And another wave would come and crash down. And I was getting pulled deeper into the ocean, and I saw the terror on my mom's face, and she tried to pull me out and she could not. And suddenly out of nowhere, these two men appeared and they pulled me out. And I looked up like a couple minutes later, and there was no one on that beach, you know. And I get chills when I think about that moment, and I think back and I think, if I would have died that day, it would have been classified as a drowning, but it would have been the direct result of my compulsive reading, you know. And another time, after my daughter was born, I did end up having her. And I was freaked out, and I was freaked out, and everything turned out okay. She did have some kind of infection thing and was in the NICU and stopped breathing for a split moment. But other than that one moment, like, everything was okay. And afterwards, I got diabetes, gestational diabetes that never went away. And then because of my weight, you know, I had diabetes, high blood pressure, heart palpitation, chest pains. Like, I remember one Christmas Eve being like in my yard holding my chest because I was certain I was going to have a heart attack. And, you know, I've broken toilet seats. I broke a toilet seat off a wall one time, like a public toilet seat, and found myself in a puddle of water and God knows what. And, you know, talk about pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. That is where this disease takes me. And that is where this disease has taken me over and over and over again. I used to write in my own yearbook when I went to school dances as a teenager, I would write letters to myself and sign like a boy's name because I wanted people to think that there was someone there that liked me and was attracted to me because I felt so alone. And because I was bullied so bad in school, I used to throw up like every morning. I would have like these excruciating stomach pains, and I would just gag. And just the idea of going to school was like such a nightmare to me, you know? And They don't have to live that way, you know? And after that first meeting, someone actually ran after me and was like, please keep coming back. All the meetings aren't like this, because she knew a normal person would have probably ran for the hills and been freaked out by everything that was being said. But it was exactly what I needed. I needed to hear the problem and the solution. And, you know, the thing about this program compared to other programs, besides like the spiritual aspect, is like, no one ever sat me down and said, this is your problem and this is the solution we have to offer you. Like, people either could see my problem. You know, there are some people that might have solved my problem, but they didn't have a solution to offer me. You know, I've been to nutritionists and dietitians and weight loss programs and therapists. And, you know, I went to the therapist one time when I was in college, and I was like, I know exactly what to eat. Like, that's not my problem. And she was like, well, what do you think you should eat to lose weight? And I told her exactly what I should eat every day for to be a healthy body weight. And she was like, wow, this was pretty much summed up our exact conversation was, I've never known anyone who knew exactly what to eat and didn't do it. So again, that like shows me that I am bodily and mentally different from my fellows, because doing it would, I mean, I know like calories in, calories out. Like, I'm very, you know, we're smart in this program. Like they say, like, there's no one that's too dumb to work the program, but there's many of us that can be too smart to work the program, you know? And I'm, you know, I can be really good at math. You know, I can sit there and with my, you know, calculator and add up all my calories. I know exactly what I should eat, but I don't know how to not eat when I want the food more than anything else in this world. Like, I used to think, like, if God himself came down right now and told me, if you have one more bite, I'm going to strike you dead right now, I am powerless to stop. And the first step says we admitted we were powerless of our food, that our lives had become unmanageable. And the first word is we, you know, and we were powerless. And I think about that today, because I'm no longer powerless. You know, it's in past tense for a reason. Today I can go anywhere, I can do anything, I can smell things that I haven't eaten in 8 years, and it doesn't faze me. You know, I'm neutral with the foods that are harming me. You know, I don't have an opinion on it. Like, I heard a speaker recently say, like, looking at her alcoholic foods is like sitting here with this water bottle. Like, I don't have an opinion on it, you know. And I want to eat a piece of cardboard, and I want to eat a hot fudge sundae today, because that's not my food today. And, you know, I try and abstain from all the things that take away my freedom. And freedom is the most amazing, beautiful thing I've ever experienced, you know, in this program. And that's the difference too, is like all the, you know, size 3 therapists that tried to tell me how to eat, they didn't get it. But in the big book, it talks about the ex-problem drinker who's properly armed with facts can win the entire confidence in just a few hours. And, you know, a therapist, it's not to knock therapists, they're perfectly fine, but one who does not understand the concept of this illness, all they can offer me is what they've learned in school, right? And the same thing with any kind of professional. But what you guys, you can sit me down and not only tell me the problem that I have, but tell me the solution that you found, you know. And it's not just like, okay, here's your problem, now go have, you know, go stop eating, you know. And that's the beauty of this program. And, you know, in the story of Vision for You in the big book, it says, you know, have we a sufficient substitute? And that's one of my favorite lines, because it says, yes, we do have a sufficient substitute, and that's the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because the diets that I was on all these years, they take away my food and they give me nothing to replace it with. And that's why they didn't work for me. But in this program, no one takes anything from me. You know, I willingly give up the foods and food behaviors that were killing me. And I get to replace it by 12 steps, you know, with 12 steps of fellowship, understanding, sponsorship, phone calls, 9 tools. And just an amazing cadre of people that understand and get it on a personal level, you know, not just something that they read about, but have experienced it and offer a solution, you know. And this disease almost killed me so many times, and it's a miracle, an absolute miracle that I'm alive today, you know. And not just that, but all the many blessings that I've received. Like, I always share that the weight loss that I've maintained all these years, well over 200 pounds, is the smallest gift I've ever been given, you know, because I came out of the womb. Like, I kind of joke about this, but there's definitely a lot of truth to it, that my sister came out of the womb like Mary Poppins, like without even trying. And then I came out of the womb where I have to work really, really hard not to have Child Protective Services called on me. And that's just who I am. You know, I'm different. And I, you know, like, I'm a decent mom today because of this program, but I have to really work at it, you know, and I have to practice these principles the best that I can. And I have my daughter's special needs, and it's been a really long, hard life with her, and she's 18 now. Things are have been smooth for a really long time, but this program has given me the ability to like use like my sense of humor to get through the darkest of days, you know. When it talks about having a new pair of glasses, like, this program teaches me that I have a part in everything and that I can look at the world differently. And that's the beauty, because, you know, you might be 99% at fault, but my 1% is going to kill me. So if my 1% is going to kill me, your 99% is pretty much irrelevant. You know, and before this program, I lived in that 99% where the world was at fault and everyone else were total idiots and jerks, and, you know, how they did me wrong. And today, you know, I have an ex-husband who, he's bipolar and untreated, I believe. And, you know, I lived for years with this man, and it was a horrible, unhealthy relationship that I didn't even know was unhealthy until I got out of it and got into a healthy one. And I used to lay in bed at night wishing for the day where, like, this man would want me back, because he would like leave me and my daughter like over and over and over again, and I would keep going back. And when I say leave, like, he would like leave us homeless and break into my house and like steal my rent money, and like I'd be in homeless shelters like getting on my feet, and then I would allow him to do it over and over and over again, just like I would allow the food back over and over again. I used to lay in bed at night thinking, oh, God, like, the day is gonna come when he's gonna want me back. And I'm going to be like, no, you had your chance. I'm too recovered now. And that was like my fantasy. And today I don't want that like at all. You know, that's like the last thing in the world I want. And in the resentment prayer that they tell us to say, I mean it today. You know, I truly want him to be happy, joyous, and free. I want him to find love. I want him to find peace. And that shows that I've truly forgiven him through the steps, you know, and I made an amends to him many years ago. And I will tell you, I have not said or done one other thing out of line since then, because I never want to have to go through that again, you know. And I can be cordial, and he's still himself, and he's very mean at times. He writes me letters, and he, like, you know, if I can say, how are you doing? And he'll blow it up into this huge thing about what a horrible person I am. Like, he still sees this horrible person that he believes that I am. And that's just how it is, you know, and that's just acceptance today. And, you know, I can be grateful that I'm not in that relationship. And I can be grateful that I don't have to live my life like that today, because, you know, at one point when I made amends to him, he sent me a letter that was kind of like, where do we go from here? And I was like, oh my God, what is this? Like, it freaked me out. Instead of feeling good, like that revenge that I wanted to feel good. And I didn't. And I called my sponsor and I was like, what do I do? Like, what does this mean? You know? And she was like, I don't know. I've never had this happen before. Let me talk to my sponsor. That's what we do here. You know, we help each other. And You know, today I was in and out of homeless shelters like so many times. I've been in so many different shelters. I've slept in my car before. Like my life, you guys, was just blew up multiple times because when I'm in this disease, I cannot make a decent decision. You know, I remember after my daughter was born, I had like a horrible infected gallbladder as a direct result of my compulsory eating. And at this point I had gained most of my weight back and it was almost at my top weight and they needed to do surgery. And they told me right before I went in, they told me, you know, you might be on a ventilator. Thank you. You might be on a ventilator, you know, afterwards, because you're so heavy, you might not be able to breathe on your own, you know. And I was able to breathe on my own, but I had a lot of problems and like an infection, and I had to stay in the hospital for like 9 days, and I went into this like depression. It was really horrible. And I stopped at a buffet on the way home from the hospital, you know, because that's what I do. You know, fear, you know, that's like frothy emotional pill seldom suffices. That's frothy emotional pill. Like, you're killing yourself. Can't you see she's killing herself? I heard a doctor tell my mom that one time, and it doesn't matter. Like, fear makes me eat, you know. But this program, the 12 steps of this program get to the root of why I ate in the first place, why I had to harm myself, why I had to, you know, live the way that I was living. And today I don't have to live that way. And the most beautiful thing is, like, not only am I maintaining well over 200 pound weight loss, but like thousands and thousands of emotional pounds off of my mind. You know, I get to be free in this world today. I get to walk around with my head held high. And, you know, I have a home today. I have a stable home that I've been in for like 4 or 5 years now. And, you know, it's so funny because a couple years ago, my landlord raised my rent. And my very first thought was, oh my God, I've stayed long enough for someone to raise my rent. Like, it was like almost like a joyful experience, because it's like, sounds so weird, but I've never had my rent raised. Like, honestly, I've never had my rent raised before because I've never stayed long enough for anyone to raise my rent, you know. And I have a relationship today with a woman who's in these rooms, and we've been together now for 13 years. And together, you know, with these 12 steps as our basis of living, we have a beautiful relationship. And we've grown as a couple so much that it was just unbelievable, you know. And we both work this program. So it's like, you know, it's so easy to see where we're at fault for things, which really helps in a healthy relationship. And, you know, we get to have this really nice life. And sometimes I'm like a chaos addict. So sometimes my nice, stable life is like so boring, like I can't even stand it. And one time I was complaining to my partner about how bored I am with life and how, like, there's nothing. Like, I get off on, like, either chaos, either up or down. So even negative, from the time I was a little kid, I used to do all these things to get my mom to give me negative attention. And she would take me to, like, therapists, and they were like, well, you're giving her attention. It doesn't matter if it's negative. And she was like, but why would you want me yelling at her? And the doctors were like, but you're still giving her attention. And that's what it makes me think of. Like, even if there's, like, horrible stuff happening, it's some kind of, like, adrenaline because it's new and it's different. But when I wake up every day, there's nothing great and nothing bad. I go to the same job that I've been at for 15 years, and I drive my new car, and I'm in my house that I've had forever, and my relationships are good. And, you know, I was kind of talking about that one time, and my partner was like, you know, some people would call that serenity. And it's like this, you know. And what I'll never forget, and I know I'm almost done, I'm going to end with this, but one time I called this old timer one time, and she's a friend of mine, and she's been in program for like 40 years. And I was like, is this all there is to life? And she goes, yes. And I didn't expect an answer. It was kind of a rhetorical question, but she was like, yes, this is all there is to life. And these are her words. She said, now and then you have a really great meal, take a really great trip, have some really great sex. Other than that, this is all there is to life. And it's like, oh, So, okay, I guess only an addict always wants something amazing all the time or horrible all the time, you know. But even keel is where I have problems, but that's where I find my freedom. That's where I find my recovery. And that's why I keep coming back and I keep working these steps every day to remind me of where I was and where I never want to go back to again. And this is truly, truly a life beyond my wildest dreams, regardless of what's going on around me. And that's the thing, regardless of what happens in my life, my day-to-day life, there's a peace and a joy in my heart today that nothing and no one could ever take away. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Cindy, for your pitch and for being of service. Really an inspiration. Now it's time for questions and answer until 10:55. So whoever's got a question, please feel free to jump on in or wave on in. Meeting is now open.
Jennifer, compulsive overeater. Cindy, thank you so much for your share. And I'm just really happy to be here and happy to be abstinent today. And I ask myself a question and I ask my friends a question. It's like, is this all there is? I do that. It was maybe just less than a week ago that I did it again. And I always say, I'm like, oh, I'm having a midlife crisis. But it's like, okay, I've been asking this question like probably every time I get abstinent, right? For a period of time, because life gets really boring. and now finally, I know when life, I think it's boring. It's like, okay, that's a good thing. That's actually a positive sign these days. I can acknowledge that. And so I really, really relate to that. Gosh, what's going on for me? Life is so good. Why am I so unhappy or not unhappy or just dissatisfied? I think probably is a better word. Which brings me back to the program and just back to my higher power and back to you guys and whatnot. I've shared this 1,000 times and I'll keep sharing it because it's true for me. Yes, I have an obsession of the mind and the allergy of the body for me is really freaking strong. It's a huge part of my disease and my experience of the disease. And the reason I know this is because when I stop eating certain foods, everything is different. It is different. So different in the best possible way. Yeah, it gets quiet. Not thinking about, I'm not obsessing, I'm not when's the next this, or I shouldn't have done that. I absolutely need to work the spiritual side of the program. And I do, and I know also for myself, the more, I read something, I say a prayer, I reach out to my sponsor, I go to a meeting, all the tools that we have, the more of those I do every day, the more peaceful I am. And the more peace I have around my disease, sorry, my cat's jumping around. But there's no question that certain foods, I'm freaking useless if I'm eating certain foods. It's just, even if it's not that bad, or it's not just X and Y, it's actually, A, B, and C too. But acknowledging that and being willing and surrendering to that is so much joy. So I just want to share that and happy to be here. Thank you. Sorry, was I supposed to ask questions rather than share about myself? I apologize. Selfish. Okay.
Okay. You needed to share what you needed to share, girl. We're all here for you. Anybody else who wants to share or?
Rhiannon, compulsive overeater. I have a question. And my question is, and we just heard it shared about also, is the, how do you get around and past the, this again? That's just what we're going to do. We're going to have these abstinent foods and we're going to have this healthy relation. It was just, are you sure? And that's, and I get real childish. People that know me on this particular Zoom will tell you we hear a lot about me being a brat. So how do you get How do you get past the bratness of it all?
I wanted to say, well, I'm just perfect all the time, so I don't have that issue. But no, I'm just kidding. You know, it's just, it's a process. I mean, I think sitting in the uncomfortableness, because like some people, like one of the things that I get asked questions is because I've been in the program over 20 years. And right now, I don't think I share this, but I have 8 years of abstinence. So there was a lot of up and down for like years. And so a lot of people ask, like, what's the difference? Like, what made you finally put down the food? And I think it's kind of the same thing. Like I always share, it's because it's like the desperation. So it's like, I think I can get like an emotional desperation too. Like I was so sick and tired of being sick and tired of where I was with the food and seeing like every, like sitting in these rooms. Cause when I say a relapse, I was in the food and out of the food, but I always had a sponsor and I always was trying to work the steps. And I had like 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. It was just like not consistent. So I was here and I was hearing the message and I was seeing the recovery and I was not able to be consistent with it. And it was so painful. And I kind of think that's the same thing with like your question is like, when I'm sick and tired of where I'm at, you know, and feeling that discontentment, you know, restless, irritable, and discontent. And I have it in my book written down what those three words mean in like my own language. And one of them, I think it's discontentment, like never satisfied. And I'm like, wow, that like if you look up never satisfied in the picture, like you'll see my picture. Like it's literally my picture right there. That totally sums up my entire world, is I'm never satisfied. And I was reading there's a meditation, one of our books, it says something about like, I don't know exactly what it says, but to the extent of like an addict, like complainer will find trouble in paradise, will find something wrong. Like, you know, and someone was talking about like, I could be at Disneyland and like, complain about everything because just seeing like the negative. And I think it's like that with us and with me, you know. So I wake up every day and I continue to seek this higher power of my own understanding, and I continue to do the things that this program tells me to do regardless of how I feel about it, because that's what I was taught. And you know, I can't wait for like I can't wait to take the action before like waiting for the feelings of wanting to do it and the excitement. I have to take the action first, and then that tends to follow, you know. That was a very long answer.
Good answer.
That was a great answer. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Cindy. My name is Stephanie. I'm a compulsive overeater bulimic. I'm so happy that you're here today with us. And I'm just wondering what your 11th step practices like on awakening. What is your, how closely do you follow the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous? And what does that, any tips or anything you can share with us?
Yeah, and that's a good question. I love the big book. I actually almost too much sometimes. Sometimes I have an aversion to like OA literature. I'm sad to say, but it's just the truth. And like, I subscribe to the AA magazine. Like I'm in love with AA. I shouldn't say this, but I kind of wish I was an alcoholic. I should not say that, but like, I almost wish I was in that program, like instead of this one, just because I relate on such a deep level to the addict. And to me, it doesn't matter. Like I use food, but it doesn't matter what the substance is. So when I read AA stories, like I relate on such a deep level. And that had nothing to do with your question, but your question. I am also someone who gets bored very easily. So I actually have really changed up my practice. So I found that as long as, like, it doesn't matter what we do, as long as we're doing something, as long as I'm doing something to seek my higher power every day. Cause I'm one of these people that like would spend like years and months and weeks, like researching how other people do stuff. And then the more I research how you do it, the more I'm not doing anything, you know? And that's how it was with my food too. Like, and that's why I don't like to talk about food that much or deal with food. Like when I sponsor and stuff, we really get into the steps, and I don't like to do a lot of discussion about food because I spent like so many years like trying to find the perfect food plan, and that would finally get me abstinent. And when I got rid of that and just threw myself in the steps, that's when I found my recovery. And I think it's kind of like the same thing, just doing something. And like today, I have a journal. It's called, well, it doesn't matter what it's called, but it's a non-approved kind of thing, but that I found. And it's a like an AA journal, so like a sobriety journal, and it has like on awakening, and it has, you know, a gratitude list, and it has like a journaling section to do, like, or I do like a dear God letter, and then it has like the when we retire at night questions. So I do that. I also have an app that I use sometimes. Sometimes I just do free journaling. I do some reading every day. You know, I try to do meditation, like a 5-minute meditation, deep breathing kind of thing, because that helps calm me, because I kind of have a lot of anxiety and stuff. So I've done different things at different times in my recovery, and I try to like switch it up so that I'm not too bored, because I get like really bored easily. So
I have a question. So I'm just wondering, not that there would be necessarily one most important thing, but what would you say is your, you know, really important aspect of your daily practices that really keeps you grounded in recovery?
Probably like sponsoring, actually. I feel like sponsorship is kind of like everything together, you know, like when I take someone through the bit, when I sponsor, like we read the big book together. So when I'm sponsoring, I like take people through the big book line by line. So I'm staying in the big book and working the steps and just helping someone else and being there for someone else. And I noticed that when I don't have a morning call, like I just snooze and snooze and snooze, you know, and I don't wake up enough time for my own recovery. But when I know someone's going to call me at a certain time, like I get out of bed. So it really helps me just knowing that like someone else is like depending on me, even though like part of me is like, why can't they just cancel? Like, I think that a lot, like I wish that they would cancel. I get like a text, I'm like, oh, maybe they're canceling. And then, but it's really the thing that like keeps me like there, and even though I don't always want to pick up the phone, you know, it's like anything that I do, like I don't necessarily want to come to meetings, but I've never been to a meeting and thought, God, what a waste of time, you know. It's always like, oh wow, that was exactly what I needed, you know. And the same thing with like when I speak, like I feel God when I'm sharing in a way that I have never experienced a higher power in my life, you know, and I struggle with the concept of a higher power, and like I compare myself a lot to other people's concepts, but my mind is so loud all the time. When I'm sharing at a meeting, when I'm speaking, like I literally feel like something controlling my entire being. And it's the only time that there's like quietness. I'm like answering questions that have nothing to do with what the original question was, but sorry. We'll blame God.
Thank you so much.
Yes. No, it's perfect as far as I'm concerned. Right. That answered all the questions of my heart. Yeah.
Oh.
You spoke right to it. Okay. 10:55, right? It's Rick. Are we on? I'm on board here, 10:55. It's now time to close the meeting. That's what it says on my script. Thanks to our speaker, Cindy. And yay, Cindy.
Yeah.
And we welcome back anyone who wishes to attend, no matter where they are in the recovery process. Would someone please read promises? We've got that handy. Or I can grab my book and do a sidewinder thing.
You can do it. Rhiannon, compulsive overeater. The promises. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we're halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we've gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. And that feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook on life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them.
For a moment of silent meditation, God, grant me the serenity, to accept the things that cannot change. Courage to change the things that I can. I will not mind. Be done.
Amen.
It works if you work it and we're worth it.
Yay!